Blog Talk Radio.
I hate you both. I've hated you ever since I can remember. I hate you, and I wish you both had cancer.
Cancer?
Yes, in the head.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Tell me, you built a time machine out of a DeLorean?
People seem to like me because I am polite and I'm rarely late.
And now the host of the Stupid Cancer Show, Matthew Zachary.
Monday, April 27th, and we are once again live on the Stupid Cancer Show, the voice of young adults with cancer. We are your friendly neighborhood weekly social webcast, finally giving that voice to nearly 5 million young adults affected by cancer. This broadcast is a program of the I'm Too Young for This Cancer Foundation, a national leader in the fight against cancer, working exclusively on behalf of survivors and their care providers under the age of 40. Got cancer? Sucks, huh? Well, get busy living, because the Stupid Cancer Show is on the air. Welcome to tonight's broadcast, my friends. We are here to change the world one chemo infusion at a time, and share all of our collective crapness. Now, call me a hippie, but do not call me a victim, because I don't believe that change is possible if you never disrupt and challenge the status quo. I am still here, you are still here, and this is why we fight. Forget the cure, folks. That's right, you heard it here first. Forget the cure. Survivorship is all that matters. So, Welkland, we care not just about the quantity of your life, but the quality, too. Why? Because there's more to the cure than just research. The need to cure cancer for young adults, whatever that means, is only going to come from within our own ranks. Are we on our own? Well, I say that if we're the generation that invented Google and Facebook, Second Life, and kept Sanjaya on American Idol all those weeks, we should be able to take care of our own. This is Generation Cancer, and it is our fight. We have the sheer numbers, the voting power, and the influence to change the rules. Because remission is not an excuse for a cure, and survivorship is all that matters. Last week's show, part one of our pre-OMG Summit Buzz Nation with Sage Bolte, Meg Harrison and Karen DeMero from the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, and Marcia Stein from the Young Survivor Coalition. Tonight's show, part two of the pre-OMG Summit Buzz Nation with none other than the one and only Kevin Hearn from the Bare Naked Ladies, Lindsay Nora Beck, tongue cancer survivor, founder and CEO of Fertile Hope, and joining us here live in the studio, Julie Larson, Young Adult Program Director at Cancer Care. Hello, Julie.
Hello. It's nice to be here tonight with everybody.
All righty. So hello, my friends, and welcome to yet another fun-filled and exciting romp through the hand tonight's Stupid Cancer Show, and a Stupid Cancer welcome to all of our first-time listeners here on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Coming at you live from the Chemo Deck, our fabulous studio in downtown Manhattan, I am your host, Matthew Zachary, a 13-year young adult pediatric brain cancer survivor. And as always, joining me live in the studio with Julie Larson, our chief cancer anarchist, Jack Bouffard. Hello, Jack.
Hey, Matt. How are you?
I'm doing great, my friend. Jack will be monitoring our live concurrent interactive chat room, so if you have something to say, well, I might ignore you. He won't. But feel free to ignore him, as the ladies do.
Like Julie's doing right now?
Like Julie's doing right now. And, of course, we would not be complete without introducing my official partner in crime here on the Stupid Cancer Show, hailing from the Windy City of Chicago, fellow young adult survivor and author of the acclaimed book, Everything Changes, The Insider's Guide to Cancer in Your 20s and 30s, the lovely, talented, blogtastic, and spectacular Carol Rosenthal.
Hello, Matthew.
How you doing? This is a really great packed little group we have here tonight.
Yeah, I like having a jam-packed show. It's kind of fun.
We can share the wealth here with the microphones.
Yeah, we're all having to share over here.
That's okay. It's nice and cozy on this
Jack
side
and
of the studio.
We're snuggling Jack up over here.
Yeah, this is Jack's night.
Is this what you mean, Matthew, when you say the couch is cozy?
The couch is cozy here at the chemo deck. Exactly. So what's going on? We have the conference coming up next Monday. We have a big the happy hour in New York City on Wednesday. There was something specific I wanted to talk about today. I forgot what it was. It was something. Was it something like cholesterol is good for prostate cancer? Did you guys see that tweet that I put out there?
I saw it this morning.
Yeah,
I actually read that while I was eating my bacon and fried mayonnaise balls that I was smothering in butter.
Oh, God. Jack knows how to live.
Yummy.
Yeah, apparently, like, a high cholesterol diet reduces the risk of prostate cancer.
Yeah,
really?
I'm on it.
Is that just because you're going to die before you're old enough to get prostate cancer?
Why not nip it in the bud if you can't do that, right?
Exactly.
Better than getting that swine flu.
God, what is that about? I don't know. Anyone scared of swine flu?
Eight probable cases in New York, and it's a huge epidemic. Huge.
I'm no longer kissing swine.
Is this the new SARS, or what is this?
It's the new disease of the week that everybody needs to freak out about.
It's a combination between a chicken, a bird, and a human virus.
Sweet.
Is that like a turducken or something?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, John Madden. That's why John Madden retired.
Well, I love the major precautions that they have, you know, all the head honchos at the CDC coming on, you know, NPR and letting us know how to avoid this is by not sneezing on someone else. You know, cover your mouth when you sneeze and cough. I'm like, you know, isn't that sort of what we should be doing to begin with? I didn't know this was a, you know, red alert news update.
Exactly. Wash your hands.
Is there a vaccine for it, or are they just telling everyone you're going to die?
I don't think that
you're going
to
die.
That there's a vaccine to prevent it. I do think. I mean, don't they?
They said.
I think, you know, everybody's. I think that the calming factor is we've stockpiled medication should this become a major epidemic. So we're stockpiled.
Okay, so the Purell industry is going to go through the roof now. It's time to buy Purell.
I just drank a bottle to be safe. but what they did say was just wash your hands and, you know who you're talking to.
Keep your feet.
Yeah.
They are scrubbing down a couple schools in Queens, I hear.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Uh-huh. So that's important.
Whatever happened to survival of the fittest? I mean, it's like asbestos, swine flu. It's like all the kids go home now. Like back in the day, it was like, okay, you just deal with it. And
right. Lead paint. Just learn, kids. Learn with the lead paint. Who cares?
Fried mayonnaise balls with butter.
All right. That is Jack's secret to longevity.
Seriously.
Oh, and he's from Connecticut. I'm never going to Connecticut again.
Fried mayonnaise balls.
Ah, all right. We just hear in the chat room from our producer, Demos, 20-plus cases in New York, severe flu symptoms. Drugs can treat it if you take them at 48 hours of onset.
Okay.
Okay.
Take a lot of drugs, everybody.
It's like we need to start wearing our...
Early detection is the key.
Isn't it always? Although I'm going to go, you know, I'm gonna leapfrog over Jeff's fried mayonnaise balls and just say tinfoil hats.
What exactly did you mean by that?
I had to say it that way. Anyway, speaking of tinfoil hats and deep-fried mayonnaise balls, let's get to Jack in the news. And I'm pulling an Abe here.
Hello, I'm Kent Brockman, and this is Eye on Cancer.
Just the facts, ma'am.
Alrighty, during this part of the Stupid Cancer Show, we announce worthy news stories to our adoring listeners to inform them about the latest and greatest in young adult programs, services, events, projects, and other stuff. If you have an upcoming program, event, press release, or other stuff that you would like to hear broadcast during this segment, please fax it to us at 646-861-2565 or email jack at i2y.com. That's jack at i2y.com. Are you ready to rumble? Let's go. Here you go, Jack.
Thank you, Mr. Buffer. First up, next Monday, Matthew, I don't know if you're aware, but that is our OMG conference. Our OMG Summit for Young Adults is brought to you by the I'm Too Young for This Cancer Foundation.
Never heard of it.
The Leukemia Lymphoma Society. Monday, May 4th here in New York City. 1 week from tonight. I can't believe it's next week.
Crazy.
The Oh My God Summit provides attendees with valuable resources specific to the needs of young adult patients and survivors. You can check out the OMG website at www.omgsummit.org. As a precursor to next Monday's summit, this Wednesday night here in New York City, the I2Y New York Meetup Group is staging our pre-OMG happy hour. Wednesday, April 29th at the Mercury Bar, located at 9th Avenue and 46th Street in Midtown Manhattan. Join us as we kick off the OMG 2009 week with a fun night out on the town. I guess this would be kicking off the week, not Wednesday, right?
We're pre-kicking off the week.
Sounds good. Breast Cancer Recovery is proud to present their 2009 Infinite Boundaries Retreat, May 28th through May 31st in Eagle River, Wisconsin. Please refer to bcrecovery.org for more information, or you can reach them at 888-821-1140. Drum Strong 2009 is May 16th and May 17th in Charlotte, North Carolina. Drum for Cures produces the annual Cancer Health Resource event, Drum Strong, raising awareness, funds, and cancer for cancer education and research while supporting survivorship through rhythm. Drum Strong is setting up a Team I2Y, and all funds raised by Team I2Y will benefit I2Y. To register or make a donation, please visit drumstrong.org. Julie, remember when you and I were banging on drums in Austin, Texas at the Liz Strong Young Adult?
Oh, so much fun.
Yeah. I think I have a picture of you banging on your drum.
Oh, boy.
Next up, Seattle, Washington. Are you looking for a support group to partake in? Well, put down your lattes and pay attention because the Leukemia Lymphoma Society is here to help. The Young Adult Support Group will meet on the third Monday of the month for the next 3 months. To register for this free group, log on to www.lls.org/WA. Or contact Stacey Martin at stacey.martin@lls.org. Can't Make a Dreams Ovarian Cancer Retreat is being held April 30th. That's this week through May 4th.
Congratulations.
Make a Dreams Young Adult Survivor Retreat is May 13th through the 18th, and I will be there. Join me as I head out to fabulous Montana for this awesome survivor retreat, and I hope to see you there. For more information about hanging out with me, Julie, at Camp Make a Dream, refer to www.campdream.org or call Camp Make a Dream at area code 406-549-5987.
You can go there to find more about their great financial scholarships to get there.
That's true, because if you can't afford the travel, they can provide it for you with a scholarship. So go to campdream.org for more information. Hey, all you survivors in Ohio! Saturday, May 9th, Matthew Zachary will be the keynote speaker at the second annual Brain Tumor Awareness and Survivor event in Columbus, Ohio. This event is presented by The Ohio State University, Comprehensive Cancer Center, James Cancer Hospital, and SoLove Research Institute, and is being held at the Fawcett Center on the campus of The Ohio State University. There is no cost to attend, however, registration is required. To register for the survivor event, please call Deanna Valentine at 614-293-4448. Julie, I don't know what the last time you were on events.i2y.com, but we have a lot of awesome upcoming stuff, and a lot of it is this week. For example, tomorrow night in Gainesville, Florida, the I2Y Gainesville chapter presents I2Y Stupid Cancer Ice Cream Social. Tomorrow night from 5 to 9 at Sweet Dreams in Gainesville, Florida. Like I mentioned earlier, Wednesday night here in New York City, we have our pre-OMG Stupid Cancer Happy Hour from 7 to 10 at the Mercury Bar. Also Wednesday night in San Francisco, we have a Stupid Cancer Happy Hour from 7 to 11 at the Valley Tavern, 4054 24th Street in San Francisco, California. All of these events are cover-free, and friends and spouses are welcome. Let's see. Everything Changes, The Insider's Guide to Cancer in Your 20s and 30s.
Never heard of it.
Me neither, but I read it. It was great. The Insider's Guide to Cancer in Your 20s and 30s is the newly released book written by our very own Stupid Cancer co-host, Carol Rosenthal. Everything Changes dusts the sugarcoating off the young adult cancer experience. It is packed with gripping stories and an unprecedented collection of young adult cancer resources. Everything Changes is available wherever books are sold. You can visit the website for this book at everythingchangesbook.com. I'm sorry. Sorry, Carol. Next up, we have 70k.org. That's the word 70, the letter K.org. There are approximately 70,000 people aged 15 to 39 diagnosed with cancer each year. For over two decades, there has been little or no improvement in survival for this age group. By signing this bill, you are supporting the Adolescent and Young Adult Cancer Bill of Rights to be established as a standard for care to meet the needs of this underserved population. Moving on to cancer care programs. Julie, do you know about cancer care programs?
I sure do.
You want to announce them or do you want me to?
Would you like to do the announce?
Let it go.
Do you know what you're talking about?
I do. The Young Adult Program at Cancer Care has a lot of different groups for young adults. We've got groups for young adults with cancer, young adults post-treatment, young adult caregivers, young adults who are grieving the loss of a parent. We've got all different types of groups, and they happen both face-to-face in the New York area as well as over the telephone and online. So call Cancer Care, 1-800-813-4673, or you can call me directly at 212-712-6173 for more information about how you can join.
I got Julie's number. I got Julie's number.
Nice.
Attention, New York City, Thursday, June 4th, Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center is presenting their Young Adults, New Challenges, New Beginnings, Life After Cancer Workshop. This workshop is focused on living beyond cancer, and for more information and to register, call area code 212-717-3527. Appearing in Washington, D.C. for one night only, Jonna's Body, Please Hold, a cancerous dark comedy starring the amazing Jonna Tomasic. Jonna is a three-time cancer survivor who turned her experience into a funny, uplifting performance you must see. This event is free to all young adult cancer survivors, and to RSVP, please contact Kelly Alfaro at kelly.alfaro, A-L-F-A-R-O, at lls.org, or you can call Kelly at 703-399-2936. Jonna's Body, Please Hold is Thursday, June 18th from 6 to 9. Let's see, what's up next? Oh, I think I'm done. But before I go, I have one more story, Matthew. We have Live-On sperm banking kits by mail. I don't know if you're familiar, but...
I've never heard of it.
These sperm banking kits by mail are for cancer patients. And trust me, guys, do not do what I did. And Julie, I'm so embarrassed you're going to hear this confession. Mailing sperm without a Live-On kit is frowned on by our federal government. And for more information on sperm banking by mail, please go to www.liveonkit.com. Live sperm banking by mail is made possible by our great friends at Fertile Hope, and I would personally like to send a big thank you to the law firm of Dewey, Skroom, and Howe for clearing up my embarrassing situation with the United States Postal Service. And it's not funny, and why are you taking your phone number back? And that, my friends, is the stupid cancer news.
Oh, Jack Buffard. Oh, Jack Buffard. You know, I wanted to, I just wanted to put in a quick plug for the Visa card, because the first people are now starting to receive their Visa cards this week.
Yep.
And they're starting to send pictures of them, and they're getting smart and not putting the pictures up before blurring the actual numbers to the cards when they post them.
That's very smart.
That would be important.
Yeah, that would be a little bit of a snafu there. I got my eye to a Visa card. Fraud alert! You know.
Stolen identity.
So, yeah, we've got, I think, the first 24 cards have been received in the last 3 days, and we've had about 400 people or so apply for them. And there's five different designs of the cards. If anyone hasn't seen them, go to visa.i2y.com. And there's five different designs, and I wasn't quite sure which ones would be more popular, if people would trend toward the black one or the blue one or the crazy designed one.
Everybody wants the one I got.
What did you get?
I don't remember. Oh. No, I got the blue one, the one that had the most hits on it.
Okay. Yeah, well, honestly, at the end of the day, believe it or not, it's even. We have like five of each card.
Really?
Yeah, have been issued so far. So I just find that really interesting that we're in the running to see which card will be the most popular.
You know what's nice about Visa, and I was just reminded by Hillary in the chat room, is it's everywhere you want to be.
I was going to say it's everywhere your chemo wants to be.
That's true, too.
For everything else, there's MasterCard.
And you can't use them to buy Snuggies. That's an I2Y rule.
Really? All right, what about the ShamWow?
ShamWows are $9.99 at Bed Bath & Beyond.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Fair enough. So, Carol, we're waiting for Kevin. What do you got on your plate this week going on?
Well, I had a really lovely blog conversation that I kicked off with some folks today on my blog about, do you need to thank people who help you out when you are down and out in the cancer world? I say no. Well, I say yes. You say thank you. That's what you do. You thank you. Thank you for helping me. But people are plagued and riddled with how can they bend over backwards to help people and make this a reciprocal experience. And I say, you know what? It's not a reciprocal experience. If it were, then you'd be wishing cancer upon somebody else. That is not the way that it goes. So I've been thinking and talking and writing a lot about, you know, what do you do when somebody helps you out and you have to be eat a little piece of humble pie and just sit there and accept other people's love towards you. So that's what I've been thinking about. What do you think? Thank people, don't thank people, bend over backwards?
I think it's a mixed bag. I think it depends on the situation and also depends on the inherent guilt factor of built into the genetics of the person.
Exactly.
And if the person did it for a thank you.
Right.
Did somebody do it to be thanked and feel really great about themselves? Or did they
then
do
you
it?
Definitely shouldn't thank them.
And there are those people. But then there's a lot of really just really caring, supportive friends and loved ones out there that just really are there and available to you. Respond to them in different ways, I suppose, right?
It's just going to be a crapshoot.
Yeah.
It's always the what's in it for me for a lot of people, though.
Yeah.
Well, you need the validation.
You know, when people give to you because they genuinely care about alleviating your suffering and making your life better, all you can do is thank them, and that's it. You know,
when you sense that, you have no problem saying or being appreciative and grateful. It's when it feels a little underhanded or different that it's harder to kind of respond to.
Yeah, though I think a lot of people just feel riddled with the guilt of like, God, someone was so nice to me, and I can't believe that I need this help, and I wish I could.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I could, you know, buy them a house now. Shouldn't I get you a car? Shouldn't I take you out to the most extravagant dinner in the world because you helped little me? And you know, that's what friends do. That's what family does. You know, we help people when they're in need. So,
what kind of response have you gotten to your blog post so far?
Well, a lot of people have been saying that, yeah, this desire to thank people really does come from them feeling so guilty and not wanting to accept help because they feel guilty and because they don't like to recognize that they actually need it.
Need it, yeah. It's hard to be dependent on others or need others when you really want to do it yourself.
It is.
Yeah.
So that's why I put a big plug in for the just say thank you and that's all you do, because then you really have to get real with the fact that you need the help and that you know this is what the human relationship is about.
And that it's okay to need the help. It's okay to
sure.
be in a place. You know, I had somebody once paint the most amazing picture for me, and I go back to it all the time. There was somebody I was talking to, a young adult, and she said, you know, I believe that we're all on a carousel of caring. And that at this time, that carousel turned to me, and I needed that support of all my loved ones and all my friends, and I needed to kind of gather that in and take it all. But that, you know, we're all on that carousel of caring, and that if there's going to be another time where I'm going to deliver that right back to somebody else and whatever their issue is. So maybe part of that gratitude shows up down the road at different times and different
mm-hmm.
experiences. I like the way she said that because it made needing the help seem okay and normal and just part of life.
Yeah, you know, I interviewed this really amazing guy in my book who I thought, I don't have enough evangelical Christians going on. I didn't have any, and I don't know why I was obsessed with interviewing
you
an evangelical
one?
Christian. I
needed
an evangelical
You needed the voice.
Christian.
Okay.
I did. I needed the evangelical Christian.
Uh-huh.
And he had the most brilliant thing to say. He said, I believe that there are times when it's appropriate to receive help just as there are times when it's appropriate to give help. You know, he was talking about that reciprocal thing. And he said,
mm-hmm.
if you ever refuse to receive, you are unnecessarily putting a barrier between yourself and the love of others.
Yeah.
It's true. I mean, the other people who want to help you really want to do it. And by not accepting their help, you're sort of refusing them this opportunity to express their love.
To be there for you, to care for
you.
Yeah, there's an indirect gain I think we get from helping others. And so, you know, by helping others, you kind of, or by accepting that help, you give somebody that opportunity to care for you. And that's something that you've actually given to them by letting them in.
But I look at the road that I, you know, have traveled with this little wrestling thing around receiving help, because I was diagnosed almost 9 years ago, and it took me a good couple years to be able to accept help and not feel guilty about it, you know? I mean, there were times when I had to accept help because, you know, either do that or I'm going to wither away in my apartment and not eat for, you know, a good month and a half, and that'll kill me before the cancer does.
Yeah.
There are times when you just have to accept the help, but eventually the guilt around it became less and less, and now I'm just like, excuse me, I don't feel well. Which one of my friends is going to, like, run down the street and get me the soba noodles?
Yeah, Carol,
I put it out there all the time.
Yeah, Carol, I felt the same way when I was diagnosed January of last year. I was really struggling with the fact that a lot of my friends and family were, you know, willing to help me out. I just needed to accept it. And I resisted it for a little while because I wanted to be strong and independent. But then I sat back and thought, well, if this was so-and-so, if this was somebody else, then how would I handle the situation? And, of course, I would be there for anybody else the way that all these people were there for me. So I just had to say, you know what, it's just your time to receive, and you can give back, you know, when you get better. And that's what I try to do.
Absolutely. And, you know, you're probably a role model to any one of those folks who ever might be in need in the future. They can be like, you know what, Jack did it.
Yeah,
Jack sat on his ass and accepted our help. I can do it, too.
You know, I also notice such a difference when I say to people, you know, you haven't been a person in your life that's constantly asked for help. You seem to be pretty capable, pretty independent.
Mm-hmm.
This is a period of time. This is a very distinct period of time. This is the time when you call in the troops. And then, you know, we have every reason to believe that when this period of time kind of shifts and changes again, you're going to go back to being independent and capable, and that's going to shift again. So it's not like that this becomes a dependent role that you take on always at all.
Yeah.
At all.
Yeah,
it's a very different time.
Temporary.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, that's what's been filling my head today. I've been thinking about the whole, you know, giving and receiving conversation.
It's a good conversation to be having.
Uh-huh.
So let's talk about I guess Kevin, hopefully we're going to play one of his tracks anyway, regardless whether he calls in or not. But let's talk a little about the OMG Summit. I can't believe it's a week away, and we've been planning it for like almost 8 months now. And
wow.
we
over. We're about to have a baby.
I know, it's practical.
It's gestation period. It's almost over.
And I can imagine the postpartum that's going to happen afterwards. But we launched it in like, I think we launched it on April 2nd. Registration filled entirely in like 2.5 weeks, and the waiting list is now like 32 people.
Right. Wow.
And it's just huge. It's just a testament to the absolute necessity. This might be Kevin, 416, which is very cool. Demos is going to go in there and check it out. But, yeah, I mean, honestly for me, if I could take a personal thing, it's a dream come true for me to see a conference like this manifest from nothing. And that I've been to so many cancer conferences in the last 10, 12 years, and they were just, you know, they were informative and they were educational. I didn't necessarily leave, you know, like I just saw a Rocky movie. But I wanted to go to a cancer conference where I left feeling like I just saw a Rocky movie. So,
are you passing out raw eggs?
How about a rock concert?
Do we have to climb the stairs?
I don't think so.
We have to go to the Philadelphia Art Museum and run
the
stairs.
Exactly. I do think that's Kevin. So, you know what? Let me let's try this here. Let me bring him on. No cue music here. Just gonna bring on Kevin. Kevin, are you with us?
Da-na-da-na.
Da-na-da-da. You get applause, my friend. Kevin Hearn from the Bare Naked Ladies, my friend. Welcome to the Stupid Cancer Show.
Did somebody say raw eggs?
Yeah. We were discussing what it's like to listen to that I want to go to a cancer conference where I leave as if I just saw Rocky IV and I was 14 years old.
Right. Yeah, and you can jog all your way through the city.
Yeah, and I can weightlift my entire family on an ox cart in Russia.
Nice.
That's a good feeling.
I think we're from the mac and cheese working out type of protein.
Oh, all right. I'm sorry.
Not raw eggs.
Okay. Yeah, definitely
okay.
Mac and cheese.
Sorry.
So yeah, I mean, we are so excited. First of all, we were excited that you were going to come and perform for us, but then as a surprise, you know, I guess your band members got jealous and of how awesome this was going to be. And we're announcing to the entire listenership of the show, the entire Bare Naked Ladies band will be performing next week at the OMG conference. That gets a huge applause.
That's
huge. That's awesome.
Wow.
All right, enough of that.
If there's one thing we want or we don't want, it's jealous Bare Naked Ladies. So we had to have, you know, we had to let them come.
We need equal equity amongst the band members.
That is so true.
So, Kevin, we first got introduced quite a while ago, and you've been involved in our first project that we launched in late 06, believe it or not. I think we were probably in touch in early 06, if not late 05.
That, this, Was that the CD sampler?
Yeah, the CD sampler, yeah. We've given out over 50,000 copies of that since it was launched, and they've pretty much all gone directly to cancer patients at hospitals and be distributed at cancer conferences, much like the OMG Summit. And it's gotten tremendous reviews, and it's been profiled in lots of magazines. And just it was just an amazing project, and it was such a privilege to have you involved with that. But you have an amazing story. You had CML before Gleevec, before transplants, and, I mean, that sucked.
Yes. that was 10 years ago.
10 years ago. Happy Cancerversary.
Yeah, Cancerversary, nice word.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah, you get an applause for that, I think.
That's all right, get an applause for Kevin.
That's always good for making up words.
Kevin's 10-year Cancerversary coming up. All right.
I'm barely at one.
Yeah, Jack just passed one, so he's envious.
Well, keep up the good work, as they say.
Thanks. I'll try.
So, I mean, I'm 13 years out, and I remember it being like the Dark Ages. It might as well have been like the Peloponnesian Wars when I was going through that. I mean, were you up in Canada at the time?
When I was diagnosed?
Yes.
Yes, I was. Well, yeah, I was diagnosed in Canada, but I just returned from making a record down in Texas with the boys. And while I was making that record, I started not feeling so well. So as soon as I got back to Canada, I had a full checkup and was basically told to sort of drop everything and get into the hospital.
Do you remember like the protocols that they offered you? Was it did you have to get a second opinion?
Well, I saw a specialist, and then he sort of took me down to Princess Margaret Hospital, which is the major cancer center here. And that was sort of my official opinion. And then it was just a matter of exploring what options I had for treatment, which was kind of a scary deck of cards to look at, so to speak.
And how did the band react?
Well, I think they were in shock, but ultimately, we talked on the phone, and they said, don't worry about the band, just worry about you and getting better, and we'll continue and do our best, and as soon as you're ready to come back, we're waiting for you.
And how did this, I mean, we asked this question of all the musicians, but did this in any way specifically impact you as an artist? I mean, I know you've written a lot of songs as a result of it, but what came out of this as far as you as a transformed creative force?
Well, the first thing that comes to mind is during the process of the bone marrow transplant and the recovery, you know, you're on so many different kinds of medications, you know, dealing with all the different obstacles that you could be faced with. And at one point, I sort of lost my ability to play the piano or the guitar because my muscles and fingers were so weak or I was so shaky, et cetera. So to sort of lose my ability to play, it made me appreciate what a great gift it is to be able to play and to be creative. And so I fully appreciate it now more. And that's one way it affected me.
And
another way it affected me, a second way would be, I learned the healing powers of music because music really helped me through the experience. Not only whether it was listening to like Bob Marley in my hospital room or writing my own music about my experience, it was very therapeutic and helped me.
And your album, your band Thin Buckle, was that formed at the time, or did that begin after you were diagnosed?
Well, the band Thin Buckle is made up of some friends of mine that I've been playing music with for about 20 years.
Wow.
I've been playing with them since before the Bare Naked Ladies. And they started coming around my house while I was unable to leave my house, really, and started playing the songs with me. And whenever I was well enough, they would be there with me in the studio, and we made that first record together.
Well, I want to cut away and play a beginning from the album. Is there anything specific you'd like to tell us? Obviously, this was inspired by the experiences, but anything specific about the song you'd like to talk about?
Well, if my voice sounds shaky, it's because I was on a lot of prednisone at the time.
Matt loves prednisone.
That's my second favorite drug.
It's a tough one, but it does good work, as they say.
Yes, it does. This is a tough one, to say the least.
Yeah.
All right, so you mind if we cut away and take a listen to the song?
Great.
Okay, this is A Beginning by Kevin Hearn and Thin Buckle.
What's a three-letter word?
There you go.
That was great.
Great song, man. Really great song.
Funny you picked that one because we're planning on playing that next week.
How apropos. Very cool.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah, I want to keep your I was talking to Andy, and they said your itinerary is always like made up on the spot, so I'm really looking forward to what you guys just sort of stumble upon for us next Monday.
Yep. It's going to be fun. The guy said they wanted to play some of my songs from that record, so it'll be the first time we've done that, which is really exciting for me.
It'll be the world premiere.
The world premiere. That's really cool. That's really cool. Yeah, we're going to have about 200 people there. I'm a concert pianist, and I wouldn't think to have another fellow pianist at a venue that didn't have a 9-foot Steinway grand piano worthy of Van Cliburn himself.
Thank you.
Awesome. So you're in for a good instrument, I can tell you that much.
Oh, that's great.
So, yeah, I mean, I'm really, we're all, the whole team is just super excited. I don't know if you listened to the first part of the show, but we went live with registration on April 1st, and we were, like, practically sold out within 2 weeks, and we have a waiting list of, like, 30 people now. And they're just chomping at the bit to get involved, and I think this is going to be something really special.
Cool.
So I guess thank you for being on the show. Have a safe trip down, and we look forward to meeting you on Sunday.
Likewise, Matthew. Thank you. Good luck, and we'll see you soon.
Okay.
Thanks, Kevin.
Kevin Hearn, everybody, from Bare Naked Ladies.
Bye, guys.
Bye-bye. All righty.
What time is it?
Okay.
Oh, Thursday. Hey, Matthew.
My next guest. Is
coming up.
My next guest is a two-time cancer survivor, founder and executive director of Fertile Hope, and the co-author of 100 Questions and Answers About Cancer and Fertility. She founded Fertile Hope in 2001 to address the profound reproductive needs of cancer patients and survivors, a need she discovered after her own experience with recurrent tongue cancer in her early 20s. I can tell you, Fertile Hope is the de facto standard organization in this country for advocacy and fertility for cancer patients in their fertile years. My pleasure to welcome back returning champion, Lindsay Norbeck.
Thank you.
Hi, Lindsay. How are you doing?
Quite an introduction. I appreciate it.
I couldn't have written it better myself.
Thank you.
Yeah, welcome to the show. You probably heard the whole, you're on hold, you saw us talking to Kevin. We're,
yes,
like, chomping on the bit for this conference in next week.
I know, I can't wait. And I have to say, similar to Kevin, yesterday was my 10-year cancer anniversary.
Oh, my God, you get the same applause.
Yeah.
I'm barely on one.
Good luck.
It's just not about you, Jack. Very nice.
Matt, I feel like we're obligated to tell the audience that there won't be a radio show next week because of OMG.
Well, yeah, we were going to close that out at the end of the show. But, yeah, next week is the OMG Cancer Conference in New York City, and there will be no Stupid Cancer Show next week. I didn't really have the spine to try to figure out how to broadcast it live from the actual event itself.
Yeah.
Especially since the BNL is going on at 9, and it would be kind of difficult to do that. But it's entirely, you never know. You never know. But the show will be not broadcast next week. But, you know, we were talking, Lindsay, about, you know, the uniqueness of this conference and how I'm so, like, humbled at the fact that this exists. And I've been to so many cancer conferences in the last X years that were just boring. And I didn't leave feeling like I just saw a Rocky movie. And I wanted to feel leaving energized and invigorated. And after what we did last year, we're expecting that this year. And they're obviously excited to include fertility. It would make ridiculously no sense at all to not have that component to it. But talk a little bit about, like, what have you seen any improvement in the last couple of years with all the advocacy work that you've done? Has there been a yield to all the screaming that we're doing?
Absolutely. I think so. I think, first of all, you should be really proud about the conference, because what we always see with all those conferences you're talking about that are so boring is that no one registers, let alone comes, and listening to what you just said, you know, it's sold out in 2 weeks, there's 30 people on the waiting list, like, people are chomping at the bit to go. I think that in and of itself speaks volumes to what you're doing. And in terms of fertility, we are definitely seeing an improvement. You know, there's a lot of ways to measure it, but I think for me the biggest milestone was when ASCO, which is the big governing body of all the doctors, put out a guideline saying all patients must be informed of their fertility risks. Mm-hmm. And so surprisingly, prior to that guideline, no one was told. Less than 90% of people were told that their treatments would sterilize them. And so up until that day, I felt like we were yelling and screaming and saying, hey, you need this information, please, it's important. And then with the implementation of that, it's still not perfect, but now the healthcare professionals are calling us and saying, please, we need this information, it's important, and we need to be, you know, in concert with this guideline. So it's improving. It's slow, and I wish it would happen faster, but it's getting better.
Hey, Lindsay, it's Carol here.
Hi.
haven't chatted with you in this little conversation yet, but I'm just going to butt in because I always love, you know, grilling our guests and asking lots of questions. So I'm so curious if you can tell listeners a little bit about what they can do if their doctors don't bring it up, because those guidelines are in place, but just because, you know, a guideline or a rule exists, we see this over and over again with any kind of guideline or rule. You know, we have guidelines around, you know, employment and disability, but just because it exists doesn't mean that the practitioners are going to follow it. So what do patients need to do to sort of take things into their own hands if their doctors are non-responsive or their doctors don't have the information themselves?
Sure. I mean, I think first and foremost, patients should know to, you know, be introspective and think about what is important to them and then ask if that is at risk. So, you know, whether that becomes like your future musical ability or that is your fertility, whatever is important to you in life, don't be afraid to ask the question, to say, is this at risk in any way? And if it is, don't feel bad about fighting to protect it. You know, really, I think, feel comfortable asking questions. You know, of course, for me, the most poignant is fertility. So to say, is fertility a risk? Are there multiple treatment options for me, and do they all have different fertility risks? You know, for example, with breast cancer, there are two fairly common protocols of treatment, and one has a very damaging effect on fertility, and the other does not. And in a lot of cases, they have the same survivorship rates. So it's simply a matter of saying, this is important to me. Are there steps we can take? And, you know, I think first and foremost, that's really identifying what is important to you, and that differs for each person. You know, for a lot of people, that is fertility, and for a lot of people, it's not. But I think we all go into cancer with certain things in our lives that we can't imagine our life without. And so to move forward, ask questions, and try to protect it. And then I think with fertility stuff, if your doctor is non-responsive or doesn't have the information themselves, I think what's fantastic in today's day and age that didn't exist, you know, 10 years ago when I was diagnosed, is that there is a ton of information out there now. So, of course, I would say go to Fertile Hope's website at fertilehope.org. But truth be told, you could also go to the Livestrong website. You can go to the American Cancer Society. You can go to, you know, I'm Too Young for This. You can go to Planet Cancer. You can go to so many places and start communicating about fertility, asking questions about fertility, and there are a lot of resources out there. You know, I think the challenge with fertility is just to act quickly. So if you're interested in preserving your fertility or banking your sperm or doing any of those things, it's not something to really let idle in the back of your head. It's more act now, ask questions, and find resources in your area fast to help you protect what is sacred to you.
Talk a little bit about some advances that are being made in fertility preservation. I'm here in Chicago, so the Onco Fertility Consortium is very big here at Northwestern, and I hear a lot of news coming out of there. But talk a little bit about what some things are that are on the horizon and, you know, funding for more research and what kinds of research you're hoping will be coming down the pipeline.
Sure. I think fertility preservation is one of the most exciting areas in medicine right now, especially on the female side. Sorry, guys, but, you know, sperm banking is there. It's pretty simple and readily available.
You can do it by mail, too.
Yeah, exactly. You can now bank your sperm and FedEx it to the sperm bank overnight, which is awesome, especially given that there are 13 states that don't have sperm banks. You know, if you're diagnosed with cancer in Wyoming, only way to preserve your fertility is to FedEx your sperm. So, but in terms of women, you know, there are some great options and some great advances. So the most common and successful option is embryo freezing. That requires a woman's eggs and then a partner sperm or donor sperm. So for a lot of young adults that don't have a partner or are uncomfortable with that donor aspect, the next best option, success rate-wise, is egg freezing. That's where they freeze your unfertilized eggs. It's not as successful as embryo freezing, but it's getting better and better. And then I would say the next option in line is ovarian tissue freezing, and I think from a research perspective, that is really where the Oncofertility Consortium steps in. They have a $21 million grant from the NIH, and they are really specifically focused on ovarian tissue freezing and trying to prove, you know, that that is a viable option or is not a viable option. And to give you perspective, I mean, embryo freezing, the success rates are like 40 to 60%, and there are thousands of babies born worldwide from that. Egg freezing, the success rates are like 20 to 30%. Some centers will claim higher. And there's been 500 to 1,000 babies born worldwide. And then ovarian tissue freezing, we don't even have success rates yet. It's still so new. And there have been less than 5 babies born worldwide. So kind of puts those options in there in sort of order of usually choice by patients.
I have a question for I have a question for Julie with regard to this. Julie, obviously you see scores and scores of young adults dealing with cancer from all walks of life. From like an on-the-ground perspective, what percentage of them would you think are actively aware of their fertility rights or were denied their fertility rights or for whom this is like one of the more significant issues they deal with?
That's a good question. And I think that I really appreciate what Lindsay said about really understanding what is important to you and what you need to kind of advocate for and talk about. The complicated factor I think that I see in my office or even in the support groups is when you're diagnosed with cancer, there's the worry and the fear about your life. And then you have to kind of immediately begin to think about fertility. And that is a very important conversation and issue to be thinking about. But sometimes it gets weighted down by the urgency that's felt to treat the cancer. And I think that in my office, a lot of times what I'm doing is really helping people flush out those fertility questions and give them permission to give that some time and to really ask those questions and gather that information. So it's not that I don't think that it's there. I think that a lot of people do immediately think about it, but I think they feel the urgency to begin treating cancer. And if I can slow them down, or just even for a moment, to take a deep breath and to begin to get some answers to their questions, to look at the Fertile Hope. I always refer people to the Fertile Hope website for medical information and for options. And you know the other factor that's a big component of all of this is the emotional side of fertility. Fertility is about having children and you know your family and those dreams, and whether it's the medical piece of can I do this in the time before I start treatment, or the losing that option and all the emotions that come with that. That requires a lot of support and conversations.
Yeah, and just to piggyback what Julie was just saying. Matthew, you and I met for the first time at last year's OMG conference, and that was April of 2008, and I was a month from the end of my treatment at that conference. And one of the things that really hit me hard, and this is something that that I talk about a lot when I'm traveling the country and talking at all these conferences and meeting survivors and stuff, is the fact that not everybody gets that information regarding sperm banking and egg harvesting. And when I was at my Welcome to Cancer orientation, January of last year, one of the first things my doctor went over with me was sperm banking and, you know, what chemo is going to do to my body, because, you know, how the heck would I have ever known that? So I went to Yale New Haven Hospital in Connecticut to the fertility clinic, you know, banked some sperm. And I honestly thought it was just, you know, something that you just do as part of, like, you know, the Welcome to Cancer World thing. And it wasn't until 3 months later that I was at OMG and someone from Fertile Hope was explaining that to everybody, where I heard this gasp behind me and someone said, you know, I'm 20-something years old. I finished treatment 4 years ago, and I am just now learning for the first time that I may never have kids. And I was just like, oh, my God, like, how did the doctors not explain that? And then I learned that that happens a lot.
Well, Lindsay, is it the doctors just aren't trained to think about it? Is it really just like a resource literacy issue or training issue in terms of scenarios in their medical education?
I think it's a lot of things. I mean, we hear a lot of excuses, and we, you know, there's been a lot of studies on it, and I think it boils down to just several factors. It's hard to say. You know, for some physicians, it's I don't have time to talk about all of these things. For others, it's I feel comfortable saying, you have cancer, and here's my arsenal to treat you. I don't feel comfortable saying, you might be infertile, and that's all I know. What we have seen, the good news is, once they have information and once they know where the local resources are, so if they know where the local sperm bank is or they know or have contacts at the local fertility center, they are more likely to talk about it. So I don't think it's that they are purposefully holding things back. It's that there's a lot to cover in a short amount of time, and their training is to save your life. And, of course, you want that. You know, we want – people often ask me, why didn't you change oncologists if your doctor didn't tell you this? And I said, because he's the best at curing the cancer, and that's what I needed. I didn't need him to be a fertility expert. I needed him to send me to a fertility expert. And so I think once we get that message across, they're more willing to talk about it. I mean, I used to joke with my doctor that, you know, you don't know how to operate the MRI machine, but you know where to send me for an MRI.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we need here. You don't need to become a fertility expert. You just need to know where the fertility expert is, and oftentimes in the same hospital or, like, across the street. And so I think once the physicians and their nurses and support staff have that integrated into their system, have a formal policy on how to do this, or, you know, have it integrated into the informed consents and the checklist, then it just happens. It becomes a matter of course.
And I guess I have two questions. Lindsay, it's Julie again. Do you feel that there's been a shift in even just health professionals being more mindful of it? I mean, I guess that's what we're talking about over and over, but that people are sending people your way for information. I mean, that's always my hope, that if people are, you know, at the point that they're sitting there learning all their treatment options, that somebody's at least giving them a place to go for this information.
Absolutely. We have seen a huge change. We have seen, when Fertile Hope first started, every call I got was the person that was just described. It was, I'm a 5-year survivor, I'm a 10-year survivor,
mm-hmm.
I'm a 3-year survivor, no one told me about this, and I'm mad. And now the majority of our calls are, I was diagnosed today and my oncologist told me to call you. What do I need to know?
So that's
to
a good sign.
That is absolutely amazing. And, you know, we're just seeing, we're also at a great time in medicine where, you know, 5 or 10 years ago, cancer survival rates weren't what they are today. And I know the rates aren't changing all that well for young adults, but I think cancer in general in this country is being seen less as a death sentence, is more as a hurdle to clear or something to get through. The survival rates are increasing overall. And at the same time, there are more fertility options than there ever have been in the past. So, you know, even general fertility treatments came about in the 80s and 90s. You know, this is really brand new technology.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the past, it didn't matter if you talked about this up front because there was nothing you could do anyway. It was smart and appropriate to focus only on saving your life. And then if you needed to talk about fertility down the line, you had the conversation then. And I think what everyone is starting to realize is now in the reproductive world, there are all these fantastic options, and not talking about it at the time of diagnosis actually means there's a missed opportunity. And so once people realize that and that the resources are available and it's not always a time delay and that it really can be taken care of quickly just the same way that all of your other tests are taken care of when you're in the initial diagnosis crisis, that it really becomes, you know, there's sort of less of a barrier and the healthcare professionals really do. I mean, I think what I've been happy to see is that they really do want to help with this. You know, they want to see you survive. They want to see you live the life you've always imagined. They want
mm-hmm.
the quintessential success story. You know, they want, like, you winning the Tour de France with, like, 3 babies on the podium with you, if that's your dream, and it's just a matter of helping making it easier for them and connecting all the dots. And so that's really where we try to come in. And then, of course, with patients, I feel like you don't know to ask what you don't know. So I never want the onus to be on the patient that they have to ask this. Of course, I think it's great to self-reflect and see what's important to you, but I really do think the onus is on the healthcare professionals
mm-hmm.
because, you know, you get a lot thrown at you the day you're told you have cancer and you don't, you know, your life, your thoughts go in a lot of different directions, and I don't think that whether you ask about fertility or any other side effects should really be your job.
You know,
weird.
One issue that I find, is it fair to say the bastard child, the bastard child of the fertility conversation, and they've done some studies on this, is that adoption is so rarely brought up as an education piece with cancer patients. And I know for myself personally, you know, my dream has always been to adopt a child much more over than having my own. And, you know, my doctors were thrilled about that one. Thank God you're not interested in the, you know, having your own baby piece of it. But what they didn't tell me is about how hard it can be to deal with adoption issues, and I'm wondering if you can just talk a little bit about where that's heading education-wise and what developments are going on around adoption.
Sure. I mean, it's interesting because when we first started Fertile Hope, I felt a little bit of the opposite, where I felt that every oncologist would say, let's not talk about fertility, worry about that later, you can always adopt. Let's focus on curing you. And a lot of people really took that to heart and said, okay, like, smart idea, of course I'm willing to adopt, and I want to survive, so I will choose that route. And then later felt exactly what you just said, which is the disappointment and the frustration that people would say, oh, I chose not to make my sperm because I thought it was too expensive, but I didn't realize, you know, it's one-tenth the cost of what adoption is. Or I didn't realize that when you're a cancer survivor, a.k.a. you have a negative medical history, it can make adoption more challenging. And so people were feeling like adoption was held out there as the golden safety net, and then later that sort of dream or hope was crushed when the reality of the situation became more clear. And so now what we are hoping to do, what Fertile Hope is hoping to do, is to just provide more unbiased information, not to say that one option is better or, you know, the stepchild of another, but to say, here are all of the options. Here is the spectrum of options available to you. And whether you were diagnosed today or you're a 10-year survivor, there are different ways to try to build your family. And here are the facts about them. Here's how long they take. Here's how much they cost. Here are some special considerations. You know, in some countries, if you are a cancer survivor, you cannot adopt. Like, you cannot adopt from some international countries if that is on your medical record. And then in others or with other agencies, it's easier or it's supported or it's okay. A lot of people don't know that, you know, there are other options like donor egg or donor embryo or donor sperm that's not regulated. So they don't even check your medical history. They're not doing a home study. You know, they're sort of like under the radar. You can buy embryos and be your, you know, carry them yourselves or have a surrogate, and genetically, it's the same outcome as adopting. You know, you're not having your own biological children, but there are sort of ways to navigate the system. And what we try to do is really just say, here's what we know, here are the facts, here are all of the different variables to consider. And then again, each person to say what is right for them. You know, for a lot of people, it's, oh my gosh, I could never consider fertility preservation. There's no way I could handle something else right now in a different, you know, in addition to everything else I'm doing, and they love the idea of adoption. Other people, you know, cringe at the idea of donor egg or donor sperm, whereas other people, that's like the ideal pristine option for them. They're so relieved when they hear that option, and so that's what I think becomes challenging, and what we try to dissuade healthcare professionals and different people from sort of being paternalistic around, or from like cherry picking and only talking about certain options over others, is that different decisions are right for different people, and different options appeal to different people, and they appeal differently at different times in your life. You know, what may have appealed to me when I was diagnosed is very different than what appeals to me today, given my, you know, body of knowledge. So I think it really comes down to just knowing what all the options are, and that with each one, you know, they each have their own challenges. They each have their own issues, and it's really, you know, how it boils down for you.
Well, thank you so much, Lindsay, for being here tonight and for joining us next week at the summit. And it's just obviously such an important topic that, you know, we could spend a whole other hour on it tonight. But, you know, thanks so much for being here.
Sure. Thanks for having me. Maybe at the summit we can ask Kevin Hearn if he banked his sperm.
Yeah, I saw that you texted me. I didn't see that because I don't look at my phone during the interviews. But I would have totally asked him that question. And, you know, we can even have him ask. We can ask him on stage. He's going to speak before he plays, and the band comes out. If you're around, Lindsay, I know you have like children and all that. So feel free to come on out to our happy hour on Wednesday for a little while if you want. I think Erica was coming with some of the girls too.
Well, she has kids. She definitely needs to come to the happy hour.
Are the kids welcome? You have babysitters?
It's 18 and under.
Oh.
So, all right, well, we'll see you soon, and good luck. Have a great week, and enjoy the weather.
Thanks. You guys, too.
All right.
Bye.
Lindsay Beck from Fertile Hope.
All right. Well, that rounds up another great show. Jack, what's up?
I just wanted to say one thing about Fertile Hope. Matthew, remember when we were at the APON conference, which is the Association of Pediatric Hematology Oncology Nurses?
Was that Albuquerque?
That was Albuquerque. We took that wrong turn.
Oh, God, okay.
The Bugs Bunny reference for those of you who were born in the 80s and 90s, not living them. But one of the things that we heard from, you know, all of these hundreds of oncology or pediatric oncology nurses was how great it is that, like, our website, stupidcancer.com, has resources like Fertile Hope where they can just direct their patients to this one website, because what 13-year-old boy wants to talk sperm banking and fertility with his nurse or even his parents?
Right.
So it's great that sites like Fertile Hope are out there, because it eliminates the embarrassment factor, because you can just say, here's a website that you may find helpful.
Right.
And then, you know, the patient can just go to that site and use it for whatever information they want without the embarrassment factor. So.
Well, I'm sure privacy is probably, it is a huge issue. You deal with those people. They have very sensitive issues. They probably never even spoke to their parents or their friends about them to begin with.
Right.
And here they are trying to open up about something that scares them to death forget the cancer, and then layer that on there. It's just a big mess.
And particularly if you're at a time in your life where you're not at a point of thinking about your fertility, if you're either not coupled or you are, but you haven't been thinking about children. So you kind of have to flash forward into this space where you haven't been. And that in and of itself is uncomfortable. You know, I have a couple people that I've been working with who are dating, and they think that that's the serious relationship. I mean, they have hopes that this is the guy that's going to propose, but suddenly they got to ask him for his sperm. I mean, it's such a pretty big conversation at a different time in your life, you know, when you're not completely ready for it.
Yeah, that came up on Grey's Anatomy a couple weeks ago.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah,
when
exactly.
Izzy started her treatment, and they went to Karev and said, fertilize these eggs, just because he was the boyfriend at the time.
Right.
Or whatever.
Yeah,
right.
You know, you might think that that's the boyfriend, but, you know, that just really accelerates a relationship sometimes. Or, you know, people who are already feeling like, you know, they're not going to ever date again, or who will ever date me now that I've gone through cancer, that certainly, you know, intensifies that feeling when now you have to think about, well, who am I going to have a child with? So, you know, it brings up a lot of questions and concerns.
Well, on that note, I think we have no short supply of content to talk about at the OMG conference, let alone anywhere. We could do this in every city every day, and we'd never run out of people to listen and hear and make a difference.
We should.
So with that said, I guess I'd like to thank all you guys once again, Julie Larson, for being our fabulous in-studio guest tonight.
Well, thanks for having me here.
Cancer Kiss. We talk about the de facto gold standard. You are the de facto gold standard for young adult counseling and support. And Jack and Carol, as always, Carol, sorry to miss you next week. We were on a roll there every weekend for a while, but
I know.
Well, enjoy Chicago, enjoy the weather, and have a good time writing your manuscript. Is that what you're writing? What are you writing?
Oh, I'm writing an essay for this NPR show where they've asked me to write about whether or not healthcare is considered a human right. I thought, yeah, you asked the right lady. I've got a lot to say about it. So, yeah, I'm writing about the issue of healthcare as a human right, which I damn well think it is. So.
All right. Well, on that note, it's time for our closing sequence.
Prepare to activate.
I hear there's rumors on the internets.
You ever seen a grown man naked?
And so, to all of you, a fond farewell.
Hooray, I'm helping.
You are a meathead.
Oh, Magoo, you've done it again.
That was so terrible, I think you gave me cancer.
All right, folks, that's tonight's show. I hope you had as much fun as I did poking a stick at stupid cancer. I'd like to thank our guests, Kevin Hearn of the Bare Naked Ladies, Lindsay Norbeck of Fertile Hope, Julie Larson from Cancer Care. Next week, no show. We are off to the OMG Cancer Conference.
No radio show.
No radio show. There'll be a big show for sure, but no radio show. Off next week. 2 weeks, May 11th, we are back with our Calgon Take Me Away Retreats. Starting off with Trevor Lussman, young adult singer-songwriter, Brad Ludden from First Ascent, founder of First Ascent, and Beth Jones from Can't Make a Dream. So Can't Make a Dream and Fertile and First Ascent, May 11th. Going to be a hell of a show. Same bat time, same bat channel in 2 weeks. Remember, if you missed any of our previous shows, just listen to the archives at stupidcancershow.com or subscribe to our podcast at itunes.ituy.com. Remember, if it's not stupid, it's not cancer. We'll see you all back here next week, live from the chemo deck, Jack Bouffard, Carol Rosenthal, Captain Stubing, and I wish you all a phenomenal evening. Go to bed, Leah.
Fokker out.